Wondering why neither Etta nor Ida had given him warning about Jim Little Eagle coming in the back door, Tiny stormed into the kitchen, followed by Hawkins. Finding no one there, Tiny opened the pantry and found both women tied up together, hand and foot, and gagged with dish towels. He pulled the gag out of Etta's mouth.
How the hell did you let him do this without making a sound?
He caught me coming out of the outhouse. He said he'd kill me if I made a sound. He looked like he meant it, so I did what he said. He had a big coil of rope and he tied me up. Then he went to the back door and tapped on it till Ida got up from the table to see what was the matter. When she opened the door, he grabbed her and pulled her out the door. She let out a little squeak, but he told her if she made another sound, he was gonna kill her. We was both scared to death.
How did you get in the pantry?
He walked us in there, then tied us up together.
And you still didn't make a sound? You could have gave out a yell or something, and everything would have turned out a hell of a lot different.
I reckon you're right about that. Me and Ida would have had our throats cut.
Ward Hawkins stood there, staring in disbelief at the two shaken women.
Will Tanner, he's a problem that needs fixing. He got the jump on us this time, but he's gonna pay hell when he tries it again.
I ain't worried about taking care of Tanner. What I'm worried about is him telegraphing Fort Smith to send a bunch of lawmen down here to help him. We might have to get out of here in a hurry.
I ain't ready to lose everything we've put into this place. I think that deputy ain't got nobody but that damn engine to help him. If he had a posse on the way, he wouldn't be coming in here giving us warnings like he did today. It just don't make sense. He wouldn't have showed his hand. He would have waited till his posse got here, and they would have come down on us without any warning at all. The fact is, he can't close us down by himself, him and that engine. He's just trying to bluff us into pulling up stakes and moving on out of his hair.
Hawkins' argument began to make sense to Tiny.
You might be right about that, because he did take a damn fool chance coming in here today like he did. If it wasn't for these two women too scared to yell, we'd have shot him down and his engine too, and we'd have been done with him. I shouldn't have built this place here so damn close to that town and the railroad. And I thought it would be a good spot, easier for men on the run to get to.
I thought at the time you should have gone farther west, to the Arbuckles or beyond. But there ain't nothing we can do about that now. We'll be ready for him next time he shows his face at that door. Just cut him down where he stands. Everybody knows those deputies out of Fort Smith are already spread too thin to send a bunch of them down here in engine territory. It's a damn shame Bill Todd tried to make a move on Tanner. I'd have sent him into town to do the job there.
That thought reminded him of another job.
Come on, might as well drag Bill out of the saloon.
He didn't confess to them that the loss of Bill Todd would mean he had to find another gunman he could trust to work with him in his banking business. As Tiny and Hawkins re-entered the saloon from the kitchen, Bud was already trying to sop up some of the blood that had gotten on the floor.
He's done some bleeding, but most of it's on him. I went outside to fetch your guns. The fool threw them under the porch. I had to crawl under there to get them.
Hawkins picked his gun up from the table and returned it to his holster.
Did you search Todd's pockets?
Nope.
Hawkins checked them himself, finding some money in one of them. He unbuckled Todd's gun belt and pulled it out from under the body. He turned to Bud.
Anything else you want, help yourself. Then you can drag him out of here.
Dig a hole for him, somewhere out back of the barn.
Will and Jim Little Eagle had arrived at the stables in town, and Will explained his plans for how to follow up on that morning's visit to Boggytown.
Count me in. I'll be ready after I take care of anything I've got to do in my job.
I won't need you till tonight, if I need you at all. I know you've got your own business to take care of, and I'm just going to spend most of the afternoon keeping an eye on Mama's kitchen to see if there's any chance they're moving out of there, like I told them to.
Jim said he'd be back to help him and rode off toward his cabin west of town to see if anyone had come looking for him while he was away. It was close to the time when Lottie would be opening her doors for the noon meal, so Will decided he might as well have some coffee and maybe a piece of pie to go with it before he rode out to Boggytown. Lottie was in the process of turning her open sign over when he walked up.
Well, hello again.
She held the door open for him.
You must be hungry. I thought I might not see you again until supper time.
I reckon I just had a craving for a cup of coffee and maybe a piece of pie, if you've got any.
Will apple do? Brent's store got in a big barrel of dried apples yesterday, so I made sure I got me some. Lubelle made it, and she bakes a pretty good apple pie. You sure you don't want me to cook you a steak before you eat your pie?
Didn't take much persuasion on her part.
Well, you talked me into it.
You're awful easy. I'll get you some coffee.
She turned and went to the kitchen. Will was finding it more and more inconvenient to perform his secondary job as a jailer for Harley. Primary among his duties was the feeding chores. He'd arranged for Lottie to prepare Harley's meals, but he had to be there every time they were delivered to unlock the door and keep an eye on Harley lest he decide to make a try for freedom. There was no one in town to take a temporary job as jailer, and no one Will was willing to ask to risk their lives. Lubelle came from the kitchen with his coffee.
Lottie said we had a special customer coming to eat. How you doing, Will? Things have quieted down quite a bit since he came to town. I hope it'll last for a while.
I hope so, too.
Further conversation was interrupted when a couple of customers came in to eat. When Lubelle went to their table to greet them, he heard her welcome them as strangers. At this particular time, Will was interested in strangers in town, so he made it a point to take a good look and try to listen to their conversation. They were not loud in their talk, but catching a word here and there, he decided they might be freighters of some kind and were just passing through town. Will asked Lottie to fix a plate for his prisoner, deciding that he might still be watching Mama's kitchen when supper time rolled around and might not get back in time to feed Harley. So when it was ready for him, he took the plate and complimented Lubelle on the pie. When he got outside, he saw a heavy freight wagon parked at the side of the dining room, so he was right about the two men in Lottie's. It would have held no further interest to him had it not been so obviously heavy loaded. The load was tied down tight under a canvas cover. It was enough to trigger his curiosity, so he decided to take a peek under that tarp to see what they were hauling. He walked around the wagon until he found a loose tuck in the canvas right behind the driver's seat. Holding Harley's dinner carefully in one hand, he pulled the canvas up enough to see with the other. The wagon was loaded with barrels, stacked one upon another. Painted on the barrels was the simple word, molasses.
Now, who in the hell would be buying all that molasses in this part of Indian territory?
It didn't take long for him to answer his own question. He was willing to bet that wagon load of molasses was on its way to Boggytown. Thinking he'd best make sure, he hurried down to the jail to deliver Harley's meal. Will unlocked the door to the storeroom jail, and it was clear that Harley was happy to get a plate of food.
You ain't as big a hard case as I thought you was.
Will made his way to the door in a hurry to get to the stable.
You going again?
He left without another word. Will found the molasses wagon as it crossed the bridge over Muddy Boggy Creek, a short distance north of town. He kept pace far behind it as it left the main road and began following the trail along Muddy Boggy. There was no doubt where they were heading, and there was little chance those barrels were filled with molasses. Will didn't want to take any action right away. Instead, he planned to watch the activity around Mama's kitchen while it was still daylight. When he reached the grove of trees from which he had watched the saloon before, he pulled Buster into the thickest part of it and rode down next to the water. He dismounted and left him there near some laurel bushes where he could drink from the creek if he wanted. Then, with his rifle in hand, he made his way back up the bank to the same spot where he had watched Mama's kitchen before. The first thing that registered in his mind was the big freight wagon just pulling up behind the barn. While he watched, Tiny and Hawkins came from the main building to greet the drivers. Bud Tilton was not far behind them. It looked to be a joyful event as the two men who delivered the load untied the canvas and rolled it back to show the barrels. Will counted 9 of them. Teddy Green came from the barn then, carrying 2 large boards to be used as a ramp. When they were fixed in place, Teddy helped the 2 wagon drivers roll the barrels off the wagon. Bud jumped in to help Teddy roll the barrels into the back door of the barn.
Just like happy little ants getting ready for the winter. Looks like Tiny is calling my bluff.
As soon as all the barrels were unloaded, everyone went into the saloon to settle up. There was no need to continue watching the activity around Mama's kitchen. The acceptance of the molasses delivery was confirmation enough for Will to determine Tiny and Hawkins' intention to stay put and continue their establishment of Boggytown. He would wait until dark to take any action. For now, he had to take care of another piece of business in Atoka. As soon as he got back into town, Will went straight to the telegraph office and sent a wire to Marshal Dan Stone requesting another deputy and a jail wagon as soon as possible. He also asked for an advance of expense money to feed 4 additional prisoners. When that was done, Will rode out to Lottie's. There was no saloon in Atoka, so the next best thing for those freight drivers would be a good supper before starting back to wherever they had come from. They might even have brought a bottle of their molasses from Mama's kitchen. If his hunch proved correct, it would make it a little easier to make the arrest. Will's guess proved to be a good one. The wagon had pulled in beside Lottie's as before, so he followed the 2 men in, pausing at the door to see them pick a table and get settled. He was greeted by Lou Bell.
Howdy, Will. You're getting to be a regular.
I always am when I'm in town. I'll just sit over here near the door.
Would you like a coffee?
Yes.
There were a couple of reasons he was being so casual about arresting the 2 men for bringing whiskey into the nations. It would be much easier to make the arrest when they least expected it. But he also decided he might as well let them enjoy their supper. It would save him the cost of providing one for them. Jim Little Eagle walked in and over to his table.
You said come back after supper. I saw your horse outside.
You came at just the right time. I'm gonna need a little extra hand here in a minute or two. Have a seat, and I'll buy you a cup of coffee while we wait.
Jim shrugged and sat down.
What are we waiting for?
See those 2 men at the table back there? They came off of that wagon parked beside the building. They just hauled a load of whiskey to Boggytown. So I'm gonna arrest them as soon as they finish eating.
Confused, Jim took another look at the 2 men, casually finishing up their supper.
Do they know that?
Not yet. I thought I'd let them pay for their supper, save the government a little money. And we'll wait till they go outside so we don't make a fuss in Lottie's dining room.
Lou Bell arrived at the table then, carrying Harley's supper. Will asked her to bring Jim Little Eagle a cup of coffee. Seeing the plate of food, Jim grunted.
Now I see why you needed me.
Or I can carry the food and you make the arrest.
Oh, I got no authority.
A while later, Will and Jim were waiting outside the front building. The 2 freighters came out of the dining room and passed by them on the way to their wagon, unaware of the 2 lawmen following close behind them, until the big-bellied one started to step up on the wagon seat.
Hold it right there. Don't move and you won't get shot.
They did as they were told, both men with their hands up and facing the wagon. The larger man spoke first.
Listen, mister, we ain't got nothing but an empty wagon, and I just spent the last penny I had in that eating place.
His skinny partner nodded.
He's telling you the honest truth. You saying you just gave that wagon load of whiskey to Tiny McGee for nothing? I was willing to give you fellows credit for more brains than that. We'll do a recount after we get to the jail.
Jail? Are you a lawman? I thought you was fixing to hold us up. Hell, we can cut you in for a share of our money, can't we, Pete?
Long as it ain't too big a share. Always take care of the law. It'd be worth it to us to let us be on our way, and we'll get on out of town right away.
That's a fact. We was planning to leave right now. We ain't broke no laws or raised hell at all. When you get right down to it, you ain't got nothing to arrest us for.
Sorry to disappoint you, boys. I'm arresting you for selling whiskey in Indian territory. I think you know that's against the law, so put your hands behind you.
Ernie stuck his hands behind his back.
Me and Pete ain't selling no whiskey in Indian territory. We're just a couple of wagon drivers, delivering the freight. We ain't got nothing to do with what that freight might be. Besides, them barrels said they was full of molasses. Nobody said anything to us about whiskey.
Will almost caught himself feeling sorry for the 2 men, and had he truly believed they had not knowingly participated in the selling of whiskey in Indian territory, he might have been inclined to let them go with a warning not to come back. But that would set a bad example. Besides, he felt confident that he would find a considerable amount of money when he ordered them to empty their pockets before locking them up.
Well, I reckon somebody is saying something to you now. You can turn around now, and we'll take a little walk over to the railroad track. After we get comfortable for the night, I'll take your mules and wagon down to the stable.
That wagon and team don't belong to us. How about it, Sheriff? What would it take to let us go? We could afford a tidy little sum just for the chance to leave this town behind for good and never come back.
I ain't the sheriff, and you're also guilty of trying to bribe a U.S. deputy marshal. So start walking.
He prodded Pete in the back with the muzzle of his rifle to get him started in the right direction. He took a blind shot at a chance to get some more incriminating information.
Don't worry about those four mules in the freight wagon. We'll take good care of them. Who do I get in touch with to come and get them?
They belong to Ward Hawkins.
Ernie bumped him with his shoulder.
I don't know where he is right now.
I'll try to get in touch with him.
Darkness was approaching when they marched the two prisoners into the storeroom jail. As they entered Will's office, Harley called out from his jail room.
Is that you, Will? You bring me any supper?
Yeah, Harley. Jim Little Eagle took pity on you and brought you a plate of food. But you've been complaining so much about needing some company, so I brought you some.
That gave Harley something to wonder about and served to keep him quiet for a bit while Will and Jim searched the new prisoners. As Will suspected, each man was carrying more than $100, which was pretty hefty for the average mule skinner to drive a team from somewhere in Texas, which was Will's guess. After he counted it out to the penny, he gave each man $5 back.
Just so you don't go around broke.
Then he got a tablet out and wrote the sum down with an explanation as to what the money represented. He asked Jim to sign it as a witness to the amount.
I'll turn this money into Dan Stone when I get back to Fort Smith.
No need. They'll take your word for it. But I'll sign if you want.
Will unlocked the cell room and removed the cuffs from his new prisoners. The three of them all squinted in the faint light now entering the small barred windows in an effort to judge their cellmates. Harley quickly took his supper from Jim Little Eagle, fearful he might be asked to share it. Will assured him that Pete and Ernie had already had their supper.
I bought some blankets and a couple of candles for you. They're on my horse. I'll bring them to you after I take care of Ward Hawkins' mules. I expect you'll need some matches, too. And I'll give you some, if you promise you won't set the jail on fire. 'Cause if you do, locked up tight as this building is, you'd all cook like pigs in an oven.
He and Jim left them to get acquainted with one another and went to get their horses. On Buster, Will had taken hold of the bridle of the lead mule and led the wagon down to the stable. Jim Little Eagle stood by now, patiently waiting for Will to tell Stanley Coons who the mules belonged to and what he should do with them.
This afternoon, you said you needed me tonight after supper. Did you need me just to carry a plate of supper to your prisoner? I could have sent Mary to do that.
No, but you did a good job of it. Didn't look to me like you spilled a crumb. No, from what I saw down there this afternoon, Hawkins and McGee don't have any plans to pack up and leave. To the contrary, I followed these two Jaspers we just locked up to Boggy Town with a wagon carrying barrels of whiskey, which they unloaded into the barn. And now, one of those fellows said the wagon and the mules belonged to Ward Hawkins. That sort of brings it all back on Hawkins, doesn't it? And that, to me, is enough to know for sure they're defying the law and have every intention of selling whiskey to white and Indian, no matter what the law says. So I'm planning to make a little Indian raid down there tonight. And if you'd like to be part of it, you're welcome to come along. I expect you're more qualified to make an Indian raid than I am. But that ain't to say I'd think badly of you if you didn't want to get too involved with what should be the business of the Marshal's Service.
It ain't all white man's business. That coyote is poisoning my people with his right gut firewater. This is my fight, too. I'll go with you.
Good. I knew you would. I'll tell you what I had in mind.
The moon was high overhead in Boggy Town. Will moved up beside the front window of Mama's kitchen and peeked inside. Luck seemed to be in his favor. He saw Teddy Green sitting at one of the tables with two men Will had not seen before and assumed were the riders of the horses out front. So it appeared that no one was in the barn or stable, which was his primary concern. He turned to signal Jim. They went at once to the rear of the barn. With the little light that found its way through the open door, they could see the whiskey barrels seated on a cushion of hay. He counted 11 barrels, which told him Tiny already had a couple of barrels before his shipment arrived. He and Jim lifted the bungs from the rest of the barrels and rolled each barrel upside down and drained them of their contents. The fumes that began to fill the barn were definitely not those of molasses. Afterward, they went to the stable and opened all the stalls. Will ran to his horse to get his rifle. While the horses in the stalls began to wander out into the barnyard, Jim went to the corral and opened it. Then he hurried back to the front of the saloon to meet Will and untied the horses belonging to the two customers.
I reckon we're ready.
Jim nodded, then let out an ear-splitting Indian war cry that pierced the peaceful night. Both of them started firing their rifles. Jim up into the sky, stampeding the horses in the corral. Will, standing in the doorway of the storeroom, firing at the barrels of whiskey. He was not really sure what the result of his next trick would be, but he thought it would do the job he envisioned. He had hoped his rifle fire into each barrel would ignite the fumes of the whiskey, but they had failed to this point. He picked up a handful of hay, struck a match, and set it on fire. He started to take it over to the row of barrels, but halfway there, the fumes caught it. Jim saw the ball of fire that followed Will out the door.
Damn, Will. Are you all right?
Yeah, but I thought I blew myself up for a moment there.
He looked back in the door and saw that the whiskey-soaked hay under the barrels had provided a perfect bed of kindling for the fire that was now catching the walls of the storeroom. In a matter of minutes, the entire barn would be ablaze.
I expect we'd best back away from here now and watch the show.
Inside the saloon, there was an immediate reaction to the sudden scream of an Indian, causing several of the occupants to jump to their feet at the same time, knocking a whiskey bottle over on the table. The volley of rifle shots followed, and the frightened squeals of the horses. Everyone ran to the door.
Indians!
Tiny saw the horses stampeding toward the trail above the creek.
They're stealing the horses!
Hawkins glared at Tiny.
We've got to do something! They've run off all the horses! Get after them, damn it! We can't lose those horses.
There can't be many of them. And they ain't shot at us yet, so they're just after the horses. We need to get out there and stop them before they get too far ahead with them. Bud, Teddy, grab your guns.
Only after the men ran out on the porch did they realize that the barn was ablaze. Thinking to see renegade Indians riding after the horses, they were confused to see not a single rider going after them. The barn storeroom resembled a blazing furnace, and there was no hope of salvaging a drop of Tiny's entire stock of whiskey. It represented the loss of Hawkins' stolen cattle to buy the whiskey and the loss of the revenue expected in the sale of the whiskey. Hawkins was furious. He stood at the edge of the porch, staring at the blazing barn with Tiny, Bud, and Teddy. They all knew the fire was already too far ahead of them for any hope of saving the barn or stable.
Renegade Indians, my ass.
He turned to Tiny.
U.S. Deputy Marshal Will Tanner. That's who this little visit is from. It ain't from nobody else, and it's gonna cost him his life. He found out he couldn't run us out, so he decided to burn us out. All right. He hurt us bad this time, but the fight's just beginning.
He did more than hurt us. He damn nigh wiped us out. We sure as hell can't hang on here serving nothing but Etta's meatloaf. Our main business was gonna be from outlaws on the run. That and the sale of whiskey to the locals, including the damn engines. Where are we gonna get the money to rebuild the barn and get more whiskey?
The same place we got the money for the whiskey we just lost. Rustling cattle. But first, we need to take care of Will Tanner.
On the far side of the creek, their horses standing in a willow thicket, Will and Jim Little Eagle watched the results of their raid from a sandy bank.
I don't know if we finally run them out of here for good, or if we just opened a big can of trouble. Maybe they think it was Injun stealing horses. I don't know.
I don't know either. One thing for sure, though, they're sure as hell not gonna sell that whiskey to anybody. Maybe Tiny and Hawkins will think it ain't worth it to try to stay here. If they don't, then I expect I'll arrest them. We didn't know about Tiny and Hawkins when Dan Stone sent Ed and me down here. If he'd known how big a problem this was, he'd most likely have called in some other deputies to go with us.
You told me you wired Stone to send a jail wagon. You gonna take those prisoners you got back to Fort Smith when that wagon comes?
Will knew what Jim's concern was.
No, I expect I'll send them back with whoever comes with the wagon. After the hornet's nest we stirred up tonight, I intend to stay around to try to handle any trouble that comes because of that Indian raid.
I think that tiny fellow's got no brains, but Hawkins, he might be smart enough to know who did that.
I expect you may be right. Now, we'll have to wait and see what he's gonna do about it. Pack up and leave, I hope. If not, I'm gonna have to arrest him.
I think you'd best be mighty careful. I think maybe we put a target on your back tonight, you and me.
You keep a careful eye from now on, too. I reckon the show's over for tonight. You'd best get along home before Mary finds out what I've put you up to tonight.
It was late when Will returned to his office in the temporary jail. There were no sounds coming from the room where his prisoner slept, except for some snoring.
Sounds like they're getting along pretty well.
He decided he wouldn't bother checking on them until morning. He unrolled his bedroll and was asleep within minutes.
Hey, lawman! You there?
He was awakened the next morning by Harley.
Yeah, I'm here. What do you want, Harley?
It stinks like hell in here. This slop bucket needs emptying and we need some fresh water. There's three of us now, you know?
All right, hold your nose for a minute.
Will got up and strapped on his gun belt.
Back away from the door.
He unlocked the door and opened it wide so he could see all three prisoners before he stood in the doorway. He decided right away that Harley's complaint was legitimate.
Pick up the buckets, both of them, and bring them on outside.
He drew his Colt and stepped back to give him room.
Hey, don't get them buckets mixed up.
Pete Jessup called out after Harley as he went out the door.
You don't have to worry about that.
Will closed the door, locked it, and picked up his coffee pot as he followed Harley out the door. Harley started walking toward a clump of bushes about 30 yards from the back of the jail when Will pointed them out.
You don't have to walk all the way down there with me. I ain't likely to try and run.
I don't mind at all. It's just that I need to keep in pistol range, because I ain't gonna hesitate to shoot you if you do take a notion to run.
After Harley emptied the slop bucket and rinsed it with water left in the fresh water bucket, Will walked him to the pump by the railroad depot to get fresh water and filled his coffee pot as well before they headed back toward the jail.
What are you planning to do about Tiny and Boggytown?
What do you want to know for? You worried about Tiny?
You know you ain't gonna stop outlaws from coming down here. Word done got out about Boggytown being the place to hold up. That's the reason me and Tom Freeman showed up here. And they're gonna be mad as hell when they get there and find out Tiny's been shut down. You ain't but one man, Deputy. You do well to clear out of this town while you still can.
I appreciate your concern for my health. I didn't know you cared what happened to me. Move along now.
When are we gonna get breakfast?
I'm going to get it now.
There were only a couple of people in Lottie's when Will arrived.
Morning, Will. You want your usual?
Yep.
We feeding prisoners this morning?
Yep. Breakfast for three. If things go the way I'm hoping, you might need to cook for a couple more. And I expect I'll need you to feed them for maybe a week. Is that any problem?
No, I can feed them. But we need to work out some kind of arrangement for paying me.
How about if I pay you a lump sum in advance? Then we don't have to keep track of it every day. You just figure out what it'll cost for these three, say, for a week, all right? If I add a couple more prisoners, I'll make up the difference.
That'll work. It'll be a little trouble for you to carry three plates over to your new jail. I'll let Lou Bell help you carry them when you're ready to go.
Lou Bell approached just then with a cup of coffee for him. Lottie turned to her.
That would be all right, wouldn't it, Lou Bell? If I sent you to jail with Will?
Be all right with me. I wouldn't mind being locked up with Will.
You'd be locked up with my three prisoners.
Now, that might be more than I'd want to handle.
Lou Bell left to wait on another table, and Lottie returned to the kitchen. It occurred to him that the playful conversation just passed with them caused him to think of Sophie Bennett, and that thought reminded him that he had not thought of her for a couple of days. He pictured her now, still planning and preparing with her mother for the wedding to take place on Christmas. He had denied it for weeks, but truth be known, he dreaded it almost as much as he dreaded having to arrest Hawkins and Tiny. He hadn't even bought her a ring, and he knew his heart should be filled with excitement at the thought of the ceremony. His thoughts were then returned to Indian Territory with the arrival of his breakfast. Once his breakfast was finished, Will and Lou Bell walked over to the railroad tracks to deliver the prisoners' breakfasts.
Now that's what I call a first-class jail, when you serve women with your breakfast.
Watch your mouth, Harley, or I'll tell this lady to throw yours out the door.
That's right, Harley.
Pete Jessup recognized Lou Bell from the dining room.
That ain't no way to talk in front of a lady.
Will handed the plates to them one by one, then closed and locked the door again.
I hope you weren't offended by that impolite talk, Lou Bell.
Shucks, no. That's the first time anybody's called me a lady in a hell of a long time, even if it was a common outlaw.
She gave him a big smile and walked out the door, heading back to Lottie's. Will nudged Buster slowly along the side of Mama's kitchen until he reached the front porch. He was glad to see no horses tied at the hitching rail. Stepping out of the saddle and onto the porch, he grabbed the two sets of hand irons from his saddle horn and hung them on the back of his belt. The thought crossed his mind that he might be about to make a foolish move, but there was no turning back at this point. Through the window, he could account for all four men. Tiny and Hawkins were sitting at a table drinking coffee. Over at the bar, Bud was talking to Teddy. With a live round already cranked in the chamber of his Winchester, he slid quickly past the window and grasped the handle of the front door. Slowly, he turned the door handle and eased the door open a few inches at a time until it was just wide enough for him to see all four men. Ida Simpson came into the bar room from the kitchen, but stopped suddenly in the doorway, dropping a cup and saucer she'd been holding. Frozen by the sight of the man at the front door, the sound of the cup and saucer crashing to the floor caused all four men to jump, startled, as they jerked their heads around toward the sound.
Ida, what in the hell's the matter with you?
Ida said nothing and continued staring straight ahead, her eyes opened wide.
What?
He turned to see what she was staring at. Immediately, he reached for his handgun, only to cry out in pain when struck in the shoulder by the .44 slug from the Winchester. Hawkins had the same reaction, but thought better of it when he realized Will had already cranked in another round, anticipating his move. Bud and Teddy remained frozen in place, neither wearing a gun.
You two, get over there next to the table. Take a wide turn around the end of that bar.
He knew there was a shotgun propped under it. Bud did as he was told and took an exaggerated turn around the end of the bar. They all moved to within a couple of feet of the table.
That's close enough.
He turned to Teddy.
Now, mister, I want you to show me how slowly you can lift those six shooters out of both their holsters and bring them to me.
With no recourse other than to obey, Teddy lifted the weapons out of Tiny and Hawkins' holsters, holding them by the handle as if they were hot. Tiny groaned in pain even as he scowled menacingly in Will's direction. Will took the weapons from Teddy and stuck them in his belt.
You've gone too damn far for your own good. You're signing your death warrant right now.
I gave you fair warning, Hawkins. I gave you and Tiny the chance to get your stuff together and get out of Indian territory. But you were too damn dumb to take that opportunity. So now, you're under arrest, and you're going to trial.
He looked at Bud, standing wide-eyed, scarcely able to believe what was going on.
Now, I've got a job for you.
Will reached behind his back and pulled the handcuffs from his cartridge belt.
Pull Tiny's hands behind his back and put these on his wrists. I want to hear those irons click into place.
Bud pulled Tiny's wrists back and did so, repeating the routine on Hawkins' wrists.
Now, we're all of us going to walk out on the porch. You too.
He looked to Ida and Etta, who were standing still, watching in amazement. He didn't trust either one of them not to grab that shotgun behind the bar when he went out on the porch. He waited, but neither Tiny nor Hawkins made a move to get up. Both determined to defy him, knowing he couldn't physically move them himself.
I can't walk. You shot me.
I didn't tell you to walk on your hands. Get your big ass out of that chair.
Tiny made no move to get up.
I ain't got no intention of getting up either.
You sure that's the way you want to play it?
That's the way, you mangy cuss. We ain't going nowhere.
Have it your way. It sure makes my job a whole lot easier. By the powers vested in me by the federal court for the Western District of Arkansas, I judge these two defendants to be guilty of selling whiskey in these territories, designated as Indian Territory, and further, hiring assassins to attempt murder of a federal deputy marshal, and resisting arrest. The penalty for these crimes is death by Winchester. Sentences to be carried out immediately.
He brought his Winchester up in the position of port arms, then pulled it up to firing position and took dead aim at Hawkins's head.
Hold it, damn ya! You can't just shoot us down!
The hell I can't. And believe me, I'd rather do it than have to mess with transporting you all the way to Fort Smith.
I give up.
Tiny stood up, knocking his chair over in the process. He was convinced the deputy meant to do exactly as he threatened.
Damn, are you sure? Might be a better idea to just get it over with and be done with it.
Tiny just shook his head, and Will looked at Hawkins.
Well, one will be a lot less trouble and cost to the government than if I had to bother with the both of you.
He took aim at Hawkins again.
All right, damn ya.
Hawkins got to his feet, and when Will lowered his rifle a little and motioned toward the door with it, the two prisoners started walking. There would be opportunities to escape. Fort Smith was a long ride from Atoka. Convinced that Will wouldn't hesitate to shoot, everybody went out on the porch as instructed. Will pointed his finger at Teddy.
Get a couple of bridles off that pile and go to the corral, and bring two horses up here.
Teddy did as he was told and picked up two bridles.
Any particular horses?
I don't give a damn which two. Just bring two horses.
Teddy left to fetch the horses.
What are you gonna do about this bullet you put in my shoulder? It's starting to hurt.
I'll take care of it when we get to town. Maybe it'll remind you on the way there that it ain't a good idea to draw on a deputy marshal. The rest of you go on about your business now. You ladies can try to make a go of it as a eating place, but there won't be any sale of whiskey. And remember, I'll be checking on you.
Well, I'll be.
Harley stared as the cell door opened and Will removed Ward Hawkins' hand irons, then gave him a little push to start him into the room. Harley got a glimpse of Tiny McGee through the door, sitting on a horse tied to the door handle.
Ward Hawkins! And Tiny? How the hell did he...
Pete and Ernie were equally astonished to see Hawkins. Answering with no more than an angry growl, Hawkins looked around at the room that served as a jail.
I saw Tiny outside. Where's he taking him?
To the doctor. He got a bullet in his shoulder.
Tanner?
Well, who the hell else would it be?
Hawkins was in no mood for Harley's stupid questions. He looked around again in disgust at his new lodgings.
This ain't no jail. This is a smokehouse.
This ain't a smokehouse. This here's a railroad storeroom. That first place he put me in was a smokehouse. This is a hotel compared to that.
He nodded toward Pete and Ernie.
That's what I've been telling these boys. It ain't so bad in here. Tanner don't bother you much. You're gone most of the time. And the chuck is damn good. They bring it from the dining room at the boarding house.
Shut up, Harley.
Right.
Dr. Franklin Lowell ushered Will and his prisoner into the room.
Back in with another gunshot prisoner, I see.
He paused to study Tiny carefully, glancing at the bullet hole in his shoulder, but giving more scrutiny to his handcuffed wrists.
You want me to take the cuffs off him?
Doc sized Tiny up quickly.
Hell no. I believe I'd rather have him in handcuffs. He looks like he might be bringing a bull in here.
Well, at least it ain't supper time.
Well... That's a fact. I reckon I ought to thank you for that, for a change.
He took another long look at the huge man.
You might have been better off taking him to a veterinarian.
After Doc removed the bullet from Tiny's shoulder, Will escorted the patient back to jail. When he released Tiny into the room, there was a new wave of protests from his prisoners.
This cell is too damn cramped. Ain't no space to...
Well, I reckon that's the price you have to pay for riding the wrong side of the law.
Will guessed that while he was at the doctor's office with Tiny, Ward Hawkins had wasted no time in establishing his superiority in the crowded cell room. Will watched Tiny sit down against the back wall next to Hawkins. It was not lost on him that he had collected a dangerous group of men, all working for Ward Hawkins in one way or another. The thought prompted him to wonder if he had given the room a close enough inspection before deciding to use it as a jail. If Dan Stone acted immediately upon his request for a jail wagon and didn't wait for Ed Pine to get to Fort Smith, a wagon might arrive in 5 days. With that in mind, he informed his prisoners that their stay there might be about 5 days. So it would be in their best interest to take it easy. He figured it could well be a longer stay, but there was no sense in aggravating them even more.
We'll water you and feed you and make it as easy as we can, if you behave yourselves.
Hawkins couldn't resist answering him.
You've made a couple of mistakes since you came riding into town, Tanner. But this one is the one that's gonna cost you the most. You're just fooling yourself if you think you're gonna take me to jail in Fort Smith. If you'd have been smart, you'd have made a tidy sum of money with a little cooperation, but it's too late for that now. Your number's up. Damned if I know how you've lasted this long.
Thanks for the warning, Hawkins. The rest of you, the man running his mouth just then ain't no better than any of the others of you. You're all prisoners of the Western District of Arkansas, so it might be time to think for yourselves. And the easier you make it on me, the easier I'll make it on you. I'll bring you some dinner when it's time.
With that, he locked the door.
This is gonna be one hell of a week.
The situation in the converted railroad storehouse had a rocky beginning, wrought with arguments and near fights for the first 24 hours. But into the second day, things inside the cell room had settled down for all. All except Ward Hawkins, that is.
He's gonna slip up sometime. The five of us are too much for him to handle. And when he does, all of us have to be ready to jump him. I don't care how tight this building is. We'll get our chance to break out. Just be ready when it comes.
What the hell?
Luke Cobb turned to Jace Palmer as the group of five riders pulled up to a stop on the trail above Mama's kitchen to stare at the charred remains of what had once been a barn and stable.
This don't look good. Reckon we ought to be careful about riding down there?
Don't see any reason to be very careful. Ain't no sign of anybody around the place. If there's anybody here, they're inside that main house.
Marley White pulled up beside them, and the three gave their horses a kick and rode down the path to the saloon. As the horses rode up to the front porch, Bud Tilton walked out of the saloon to meet them. They were strangers to him, since he had been hired by Tiny and had never ridden with the gang.
Where's Hawkins?
He's in jail.
The riders stepped down off their saddles.
In jail? What the hell are you talking about? Where's Tiny?
He's in jail, too.
What the hell happened here? Marshals? Army? Who did this?
Far as we know, it was just one deputy done it all. He might have had some engines helping him when he burned down the barn, but he's by himself when he took Hawkins and Tiny to jail.
What about Bill Todd?
Archie Todd couldn't hide the concern for his brother on his face.
Did they take him to jail, too?
No, he's dead. He tried to draw on that deputy, and the deputy shot him.
A sudden flare of anger spread on Archie's face.
I dug him a nice grave out behind the barn.
Where is he? That deputy?
Take it easy, Archie. That's our news, all right, and we're sure as hell gonna take care of it. But first, we gotta see what's what before we go off half-cocked.
Luke Cobb turned back to Bud.
Who else is here?
Teddy Green and two women.
All right. We'll go inside and get a drink, and your cook can get us something to eat.
There ain't a hell of a lot of whiskey left. Just what was under the counter.
What the hell are you talking about? You just got a wagon load of whiskey shipped up here. Where's that whiskey?
It was in the barn when it went up in smoke.
All right, then. We'll take care of our horses, and that'll give your cook time to scare up some grub. You have got food to cook, ain't you?
Yes, sir. We've got food. It's just whiskey we're short of.
He stood there for a few seconds to watch them lead their horses off toward the corral before going back inside to tell the three watching through the windows who they were. After their horses were corralled, the five outlaws entered the saloon and began to question Bud and Teddy as to how one man was able to take both Hawkins and Tiny under arrest. Luke Cobb was not satisfied with their explanation.
It's hard enough not to understand how this Tanner fellow could walk in here and arrest them. But why in the hell didn't one of you just shoot the son of a gun down?
He was careful and surprised us. That's how he pulled it off.
Well, we're damn sure gonna take care of Deputy Tanner right quick. Where have they got Hawkins and Tiny in jail?
In town. In a railroad storage room, I heard.
Cobb thought about that for a moment.
I think before I'll take the boys into town and bust them out, I'll go in this afternoon by myself to look it over.
He had never been to Atoka, so he thought it a good idea to see what he might have to contend with. Archie looked up at him.
I think I want to go in with you. I want to see that sidewinder that killed my brother. If there's any chance to shoot that varmint, it ought to be my right to do it.
Cobb nodded.
I reckon you're right, Archie.
He glanced at the others sitting around the table.
But I don't want no more to come. We go riding in there, all five of us, and might tip them off. Like I said, I want to see what's what before we go get them out of there.
Bud and Teddy told them about the night of the raid and how the barrels of whiskey went up with the barn and the stables.
We thought for sure it was engines stealing the horses. Sure sounded like engines, but they let the horses out just so we'd go chase them instead of putting the fire out.
Marley White spoke up.
But you think it weren't no engines at all? Teddy, you say it was just that one lawman?
Well, we never laid eyes on him, but we're pretty sure that's who it was. He might have had that Choctaw policeman helping him, and when we went after the horses, we didn't see hide nor hair of the first engine. There weren't nobody chasing the horses but us.
Sounds to me like it's the lawman that burned that barn down, all right. Maybe we'll run into him this afternoon. I'd buy him a drink. There ain't no saloon in town.
Luke Cobb and Archie Todd stepped into Brandt's General Merchandise.
Quiet little town you got here.
Cobb stared down at the man behind the counter, Tom Brandt.
I guess you could say that. First time in Atoka?
Yep. First time we've been up this way.
Just passing through, or are you planning to be here a while?
We're just passing through. Thought maybe I could buy some smoking tobacco from you.
He glanced in Archie's direction.
You need anything, Archie?
His sullen partner merely shook his head. He needed only one thing at the moment, and that was to catch the image of Will Tanner lined up with his front sight. Cobb turned back to Tom.
Don't mind my quiet friend here. He ain't been in the best of spirits for the last couple of days.
Tom handed him his tobacco.
Heard you had some outlaw trouble here a few days ago.
Nothing real bad. The real trouble was with a place about 3 miles from town, but a deputy marshal came down to take care of it. And he took care of it right quick. Got him locked up in jail.
Is that a fact? Got him in jail, huh? I just rode up the street and I didn't even see jail. Didn't even see the sheriff's office.
We don't have a sheriff yet. Don't have a jail either. That's the reason we needed a deputy marshal to come take care of our problem.
He pointed out the window toward the railroad tracks.
Yonder is the jail. At least, that's what he's using for jail.
Cobb walked over to the window.
That's some kind of railroad shack, ain't it?
Yes, sir. That's what it is, and I'll be glad to see him empty it, too. He's supposed to have a jail wagon on the way here from Fort Smith, and I'll be glad to see it roll out of town.
On the way, huh? I'd like to meet this deputy. Now, have you seen him in town today?
Will Tanner's his name. I haven't seen him so far today, but he'll be around. He might be in the dining room by the boarding house.
Maybe we'll bump into him before we leave town.
He paid Tom for the tobacco, and they walked outside. Looking up and down the street, Todd and Cobb saw no one that might be Will Tanner.
Let's go to the boarding house dining room. That feller said he might be there.
All right. But let's go take a look at the jailhouse. If that lawman ain't around, maybe we can talk to Hawkins and Tiny. I want to get a good look at that place. Especially the door.
They jumped into their saddles and started off toward the railroad tracks and the storage house Tom had pointed out. With five prisoners in his makeshift jailhouse now, Will needed help at feeding time. He borrowed a four-wheel railroad handcart from Sam Barnett and enlisted the help of his son Jimmy to haul the meals from Lottie Mabry's kitchen to the jail. Will was concerned about the possibility of getting jumped by all five prisoners when he brought them their meals. To offset that possibility, he got a small table from Jim Little Eagle's jail and placed it next to the door into the cell room. The table was almost as wide as the door opening, so it fit almost perfectly inside it. At mealtimes, he could pull the table into the opening when he opened the door. Then he put the plates on the table and had the prisoners line up single file to step forward, pick up a plate, then step back to eat. Will figured it must be pretty effective, since the first time he tried it, it clearly seemed to displease Hawkins. He imagined Hawkins might find it difficult to convince one of the others to sacrifice his life so that he might escape. It would be a good while before it was time to feed the prisoners, so Will decided to walk down to the stable to see how Buster was doing, since he had not been ridden lately. Stanley Coons walked out of the corral when he saw Will approaching, carrying his Winchester rifle as usual.
I believe that buckskin gets downright homesick for you if you don't ride him every morning.
Buster went immediately to the rail to meet Will.
Yeah, he always comes to let me know whether you're treating him right or not.
He let the big gelding rub his muzzle up and down on his chest as he stroked his neck.
What are you going to do about that jail full of prisoners? Tom Brandt was asking me if I knew. I think he and one or two others are a little uneasy about that railroad shack being the only thing holding some pretty rough outlaws.
Oh, is that right? I thought I told everybody I'd have to hold them there until I get a jail wagon from Fort Smith. Then I'll haul them out of here. That place is more than a shack, though. It's about as secure as most jails, so there ain't nothing to worry about unless I forget to lock the door.
Right. That's what I told Tom.
Maybe I'll go by the store and talk to Tom about the strength of that storeroom. I ain't worried about it, and I'm sleeping in the room right next to it. Hopefully, I'll get a jail wagon in here in a day or two.